You're listening to KRUULP 100.1 FM, Fairfield, Iowa.
This is Icon Art Radio. I'm Bill Teeple. I'm here with my co-host, Alan Cobb. And we're interviewing Ken West, a celebrated landscape photographer who lives here in Fairfield and teaches at the university. You've had many shows in the region not long ago, and you've had national shows, and recently in 2009 you were featured with a solo exhibition at the Center for Nature,
the
National Center for Nature Photography in what city?
They're located in Ohio. They're the only gallery, at least at that time, who were devoted exclusively to nature and landscape photography.
You mentioned last night that the previous show to yours was Tim Brandenburg.
Jim Brandenburg. They also highlight nationally known landscape photographers. They have, the preceding fall, they had a show of Jim Brandenburg's work there, who's a fabulous nature and landscape photographer.
He's one of the most famous photographers internationally known.
Yeah.
And so you're in good company. So we're talking to a very serious photographer here.
Well, I have to say very humbly that it just happened to work out that way. They viewed me as a regional photographer in the Midwest, landscape photographer, and they wanted to have a regional photographer there, and it just happened to be after his show or a few months after.
Well, you are a significant photographer, let's put it that way, and your photography is stunning. We've shown it at before Icon was Icon, it was Gallery 51 East, and you were one of the first photographers we showed.
And I remember that.
And then we had a show of yours at Teeple Hansen Gallery, and it's very unique and stunning photography, and we'll get into what makes it unique from other photographs when we talk about digital photography in a moment. But I also wanted to bring out that you're fourth generation photographer?
Yes, I'm a fourth.
So tell us just a little bit about your family history.
My great grandfather lived in Missouri, in Marys County, Missouri, which is kind of south of the Ozarks. He lived on a farm. He was very successful, and he also had a portrait studio. So this would have been in the early 1900s, and his name was Daniel Marion West, and that's where my grandfather learned about photography in that studio, Harry Gordon West, and he learned about photography, embarked on a career in photography, moved to different cities in his career. He traveled around in different locations. Eventually, he ended up in the Kansas City area. And they had their only son and only child, my father, who learned about photography and art from my grandfather. And my grandfather, he was a nationally recognized portrait photographer. His work traveled and was shown in exhibits all around the country, actually in other countries too. And he also was a very fine portrait painter. I've seen many of his photographs, but the paintings, since there is only one copy of a painting, I haven't seen many of those because they would be sold. They'd be done on commissions. But he did do family portraits, so I've seen those. And my father grew up learning about photography from him. He was interested in commercial art when he was young and actually started working at Hallmark Cards in Kansas
City. Your father.
My father. And he, but he, as careers sort of changed, rather than really ending up in commercial art, he ended up in graphic arts, that part of the industry. And he ended up being one of the pioneers in the graphic arts industry. He was a former member of the board of the Graphic Arts Technical Foundation, Technical Association of the Graphic Arts. So he is highly recognized, internationally known in the graphic arts industry. He developed the six-color printing process. And you have to put that in context because there was no color printing using printing presses was in its infancy in the 50s and the 60s, and he developed a process of using six colors. Prior to that, the color process involved four colors, cyan, magenta, yellow, and black inks that were used to create full color reproductions. But he wasn't satisfied with the color fidelity, and he added a light cyan and a light magenta, which is what Epson introduced in the 1990s. So he developed that six color printing process in the 60s, and he also innovated a number of other things in the graphic arts industry. So when I grew up in a family where I'd go visit my grandfather, and I would watch him retouching negatives. I would go with him into the dark room. I'd sit in total darkness when I'm 6 years old, listening to him count time as he was developing sheet film by hand. And then I'd watch him make prints. And my dad, I would go with him down to Hallmark and visit people down there. Eventually, when I was 16, you know, when you're allowed to work, actually have a job and get paid, I started working in the photography department at Hallmark. And that was a great opportunity, a great learning experience, because I took what I'd learned from my grandfather. And at Hallmark, they had a large photography department, and still do. They had several large studios with about 10 full-time professional photographers. They had a very large photo lab with about 50 people working in it, many different types of darkroom, different types of process, color and black and white. And because I had a very natural aptitude and was very interested, I would learn the things quickly, and they could rotate me around and I could work in different areas. So I worked in color negative, color slide processing, these different types of dark rooms, each one is a different type. Black and white printing, did a lot of black and white printing, color printing, and also was able to spend a little bit of time in the studios, working with the studio photographers, learning about studio lighting, working with all types of different cameras, even a large process camera to view cameras and all types of darkrooms. So I did that every summer until I was about 22. And so in a sense, that was a great learning opportunity. It was in the master apprentice tradition, really, is how I view it. And in hindsight, that I'd learned the most fundamental lessons as a small boy from my grandfather and my father. And then I learned more from other professionals working in the industry. But it was very much in that master apprentice tradition.
Absolutely. So we had a lecture with you last night at ICON, and it brought up some very interesting points of where we're at historically, the whole historical progress of photography entering the art field, and then where we are today with the transition to digital photography. And all along the line, there were these questions of, is it art? What is a photograph? How does it relate to painting and all of that? And are digital photographs, are they actually photographs, or are they actually art? All these questions were raised, and you addressed all of those issues. Alan even put his two cents worth in last night. So let's talk a little bit about that here on the radio.
It was an enjoyable evening. There were a number of people there and a lot of good questions and comments and discussion, I think, that we all enjoyed quite a lot. This is something that's come up to me because when I do my shows, when I first started showing landscape photography, people, one of their first reactions when they'd look at the work, they'd say, it looks like a painting. And then a follow-up would be, well, then is it really a photograph? That would almost always be a question a lot of times. Is that really a photograph? It looks like a painting. And then sometimes people would say, then when I explain, I start explaining a little bit about the process, and I use a digital camera, when they ask the type of camera I use, I explain that. They'd say, well, is it really a photograph? And so I was motivated to give the talk at the ICON yesterday evening to really address these questions and talk about, is it really a photograph? That was the title of the topic. And in thinking about it and having some familiarity with the history of photography, I knew that photography from infancy in the early 1800s up and really until fairly recently, there had always been this little bit of a battle going on. Can a photograph really even be considered art? And I think eventually most collectors and museums came around to considering it art, and actually at one point or another in time over the last couple of hundred years, they started adding photographs to collections that they had, recognizing its value as art.
Today it's big time.
In the museum world, it may be because there was a deficiency of collecting it because of some reticence, and now they're actually catching up with that. And so from a photographer's standpoint, well, that seems good. It's finally being considered as art and widely accepted, and you don't have to deal with this issue. But then along comes digital photography, and it seems to muddy the issue, because now people are thinking, well, okay, I know what a photograph was. And if you're into landscape photography, you'd say, I know Edward Western or Ansel Adams or contemporary landscape photographers like Charles Kramer. I know that they were using film cameras, and I was comfortable with that because I knew what a photograph was. But now this whole digital thing is, I know what I can do, what I've seen my son or daughter do on their computer with a digital photograph taken on their iPhone that they've taken. And so now I can see how you can, it's no longer really what was there. So this question is, when I see your pictures, they're digital, what have you done? Is it just you take the picture and then press a button in Photoshop and it creates it? And that was these were some of the issues I wanted to discuss.
You press the good button.
Yeah, press the good button, the masterpiece. Make it a masterpiece.
Right.
Yeah, just like, as if that's all there was to it. And I realized there were a couple of things that where people were coming from. One, there's a learned experience of what a photograph is. Now, that will be different for people in the very young generation who are in their teens now, or even, you know, 8 or 10 years old. What they think of as a photograph would be different. But if you get to people who are in their 20s or older, where they didn't grow up with the digital photography part of the revolution, and that really has just taken place, digital photography revolution in the last 10 years, where it's went from very little use to mainstream.
Yeah.
So different generations will have a different perspective on the digital, what a photograph is.
I'm going to break in here just for a moment to let listeners who have just tuned in, maybe in their car, and they're wondering who's talking to who here, that this is Icon Art Radio on KRUU FM 100.1 on your dial. And we're interviewing Ken West, a highly regarded and nationally known digital photographer, and we're talking about the digital photography revolution. So go on. It's very fascinating.
Well, to carry on with the idea that I was just discussing about, is it really a photograph? I realize the one aspect that people's preconceived idea of what a photograph is, and so there's this natural question that comes up, because what they've seen with the digital photography, what can be done to manipulate it? And so it's a natural question that people would ask that. And so these were the topics that were discussed. And I think the thing that is important for anyone to understand when they look at a photograph, it's a legitimate question to ask, is it a real photograph? And a lot of that has to do with the intention of the photographer. It doesn't have to do with the technology they're using. Because long before digital photography, photographers were manipulating photographs. So the question becomes, is the manipulation done in a way to express the original experience of the photographer of the scene, speaking about landscape photography, or do they have their own impression, imagination, their own self-expression of some idea they have, and they want to take a photograph and use it as part of creating that expression? And that could involve a substantial amount of manipulation, combining, compositing photographs, altering things in ways where it doesn't even really look like the real original scene. So that would be one type of photography, and that's existed even before digital. Now, of course, digital
has made that. I mean, we have all the surrealist photographers who did that with the old techniques.
Yeah, and it could be, and so now, of course, that's been made much more fluid with the use of digital technology. But yet, it's still very possible, and this is what I think most landscape photographers would say, including myself, is that they have an experience when they see that scene, and what they want to do is try to express that in a print that they can share. No different than what Ansel Adams was trying to do. And so the technologies may have changed, but the underlying process really is the same. It's very much the same. And I was always struck when I first started doing digital photography a number of years ago, when the camera started developing where you could actually get a sufficient quality image that you could make prints that you could show. One of the first things that really struck me was reflecting on watching my grandfather work and then watching, being aware of how I was working, that there were tremendous similarities. Even physically, my grandfather would spend hours. He used a large format camera, so he had large negatives. And he also was a master of what were called paper negatives, where you'd make large paper negatives and then a further print. And because he was also a skilled painter, he could go in and adjust and change certain tonal values and adjustments in the negatives or the paper negatives.
How did he do that?
Well, he would use different dyes or
dyes.
Different, okay. Yeah, or different.
Work like a painter, right? In there.
Yeah, really. And that was, he was so, you know, he was a skilled painter, so he could apply, he could work in both worlds. And I often watched him sitting with a large negative on a piece of ground glass that was backlit from the back, so the light was illuminating through, and he was working on it with a brush. Now I sit in front of a monitor backlit with light coming through, and I have a digital tablet and a stylus working on my digital negatives. Yeah. And so I early on, many years ago, I thought, you know, this is what my grandfather did. He sat there in front of these working on doing the post-production work on his images, and I'm doing the same thing. And all photographers, in one form or another, did this. Ansel Adams, or any landscape photographer who worked in black and white, a key part of their workflow was the skilled use of techniques called dodging and burning when they would make their print. Ansel would say the negative is the score and the print is the performance. It's where you actually bring the original image, your original conception intent as a photographer to life in that print. And part of the skill in doing that was being able to know how to use the techniques of dodging and burning to manipulate the tonal values, to control the tonal values in localized areas, to really manifest that original conception that the photographer had. And that's exactly what I'm doing. It's just they happen to be digital tools now that I'm using. And that allows me to do things that they in a much easier way than what could be done before, and I would have to say in a more refined way. The other part of it is, of course, I use a technique called high dynamic range photography, which allows you to take multiple exposures of the same subject and use digital software to combine all those tonal values together. That allows you to capture a much greater range of brightness. The old rule was never shoot into the sun because you're not going to get a good photograph. And if you go back and look at photographers, traditional black and white photographers, or even colored landscape photographers for digital, the only time they would shoot into the sun is if the sun was being diffracted behind a tree or a cloud in a way that it wasn't too bright. Otherwise, they couldn't have captured the tonal values. But as you'll notice in my prints, you'll see ones where I photograph directly into the sun, and I've been able to capture detail around the sun in the sky, as well as detail in the shadows. And this makes the photographs look different than what people are used to seeing. And I think that's one reason why people will say, wow, that looks like a painting, because they've only seen a painting of a landscape that can have the sun have such a wide range of tonal values in it. And now all of a sudden they're seeing a photograph. So I think that's one of the reasons why people react in that way. Is it really a photograph? It looks like.
And they're reacting to their storehouse of impressions of what a photograph should look like.
Exactly.
And the photographs that we're familiar with, that we just accept as those are photographs, don't really look like the real thing.
Well, and I think that's
a very good point. That what people are used to thinking of as a photograph and having this idea of truthfulness. And I mentioned that last night. That I think it comes down to whether you think of a photograph as being truthful. Now, the fact is, if, as you saw in one of the examples I gave last night, I showed what a single photograph would be of one of my scenes where the sun was included, and you couldn't see the sun, and you couldn't see any of the clouds. The sky was completely white because it was too great of a range of brightness in that photograph. Now, yes, was the photograph truthful? Not really, because what I could see was much more than what that single photograph could see. But using the technology, I could then actually create something that was much closer to the original scene. But as you said, because people are not used to seeing that, all of a sudden, is that really a photograph? I've never seen something like that.
Yeah. I did a shot recently of an old metal door in a wall, a beautifully worn out old wall, inside a building here in town. Excuse me. And the sun is blazing outside, and the buildings outside that are visible through the big windows are completely burned out if you expose for the door. And there's this antique cast iron radiator under the window with deep shadows under it, and this beautiful cast texture all over the radiator, which you also can't see if you expose for the wall because it's too dark. So I did an HDR treatment of that, and you've now got what I see when I'm standing in the room. It's only, you know, not a photograph in the sense that you can't photograph what I see. And because I can see out the window and my eye adjusts, and I can see the shadows and my eye adjusts, and I can see the doorway that I'm trying to photograph and my eye adjusts. And so I'm just using the computer to improve the photographic process. And I think a lot of the trouble that some people have with this is just that not only is digital photography new, and there's sort of questions about, gee, I thought when you took a picture there wasn't any post-production. People don't realize that the darkroom was a big part of the process. And now the darkroom is Photoshop or some equivalent. And they think, well, gee, with that, you know, you can make it look like pencil drawing or brush strokes or whatever. And being able to make it look like something that it's not kind of leads you in the direction of making things that aren't truthful. On the other hand, I think a bigger problem comes from the fact that HDR is much newer than digital photography. It's really only been widely available for 3 or 4 years. And it's being grotesquely abused by everybody who knows what it is and has experimented with it. And so once you learn that, you know, you can have this movie poster that where everything has this kind of strange, blown out, hyper gritty color to it, and that, ooh, the way you do that is with HDR tools. What's happening is we're going through a very brief phase where the new capabilities of high dynamic range photography are being abused and explored and experimented with and wildly overused by everybody.
I think,
and that's going to pass.
Yeah, I think what's happening there is, again, it's the photographer's intent. And so one way, the way one photographer may use the HDR tools, they may use it in a certain way. I use it in my own way to try to, again, take what I experienced, the scene I photographed, and express it in a print as well as I'm capable of. And as I mentioned last night, the scenes are always much more beautiful than what I'm able to reproduce and create. And so it's a very humble attempt at taking what Mother Nature has provided, the beautiful scene, to me at a particular time. And they don't come all the time. That's why, at least for me, you can't get very high quality landscape photographs. They don't come in large quantities. They come here and there in little dribs and drabs as you find just that right scene with the light at that point in time. But back to the HDR, I think it varies how people use it. But you said one interesting thing. It made me think that about this technique of high dynamic range photography, trying to deal with this wide range of tonal values in a scene. As I mentioned, every photographer has tried to deal with this. Ansel Adams had his zone system for trying to precisely map the tonal values he saw in the scene into what he knew was capable in the development and printing process. And interestingly, even HDR actually had its first beginnings in the early 20th century. I believe his name was Pete Robinson. I could be corrected on that. He actually this would have been in the early 20th century, did some of the first HDR photography, where he'd take multiple exposures and combine the parts of the image, like the sky that would have great bright values in the foreground. He would actually combine them together in printing. And there were several photographers at that time who did that.
Yeah.
And so I only mention that just to explain that this has always been a great challenge for a photographer to try to capture the range of tonal values in a scene, the great range of brightness, and be able to express those in a print, because the technology by itself is not capable of actually reproducing the scene for a person. And that's what people have to realize when they say, is that really what it looked like? No photograph is ever what it really looked like. And we have no technology and have never had a technology that would allow you to create a photograph that would be really what the scene looked like.
Right.
Photographers just use the technology to attempt to do it in the best that they can.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the brightness range of a piece of paper or any other opaque material in reflecting light can't possibly compete with the real world, where there are actual light sources. It also can't reproduce what you see on a computer monitor, because it's backlit.
Exactly.
Projecting a slide onto a screen, it still can't reproduce what's backlit. And so the whole challenge has been trying to reproduce what we see in our mind's eye using whatever skills and technology are available, given the fact that as you say, there's nothing that can accurately reproduce what we see anyway, and there never has been.
They're starting to develop.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I lost track of the time and we ran out of time.
I had a feeling we'd run out of time.
I didn't mean to have the last word.
Listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.